The first thing I want to tell you about me is that I'm a story heretic. And the first clue to that is the title of my presentation, Industrializing Storytelling, which would get me booed out of the room in just about any other venue except for this one. So what do I mean by industrializing storytelling? It's about scale, but it's also about finding a process that makes an inherently subjective process objective. Your content creators, or the content creators in our midst, are going to say, you can't do that. That stifles our creativity. And there's a famous saying in Hollywood, nobody knows nothing. And we know that's not true, because we know a lot. What I mean by scaling storytelling is moving story across multiple platforms. Something that starts out as a television show, becomes a video game, has a web series spinoff, and then maybe has a novelization, and then maybe has a reboot. Down the line, the people who are spreading the story across different platforms may never meet or speak with the original creators. So how do you make sure that the story and that the characters remain consistently who they are? My belief is that story and structure and plot is character. In other words, we watch stories because of the emotional connection with the character in the audience and the emotional connection between the characters themselves. So in order to make that possible, the characters have to have a real grounded authenticity. And they have to remain true to the original source. Characters have to feel real. Now, everybody knows that's what's on your screen, be it big or small, is not real. Reality shows aren't real. But they have to feel real. And they have to be packed with emotion. I spent a good deal of my career with Fremantle Media. And Fremantle Media is best known for their reality shows, American Idol and the Idol contests across the world, X Factor, Price is Right, and a host of other reality shows. That's kind of how they're known. But what most people don't realize is that Fremantle Media is one of the biggest scripted drama companies in the world. And I've worked on just about every one of their formats, scripted and non-scripted, in just about every territory in the world, major territory for them in the world. Now, one of the things that Fremantle Media wanted to do is they wanted to be able to move talented writers, showrunners in Australia to the UK, or vice versa. What I help them do with my process is create a language that was common to the storytellers across Fremantle Media's business, be it reality or be it scripted. So lots of people think that all stories somehow are unique. And Isaac Newton didn't discover the law of gravity. He observed it. The law of gravity works whether or not we know what it's called, or whether or not we know how specifically it works. There's a physics to the natural world, and there's a physics to storytelling. That is why a cab driver can tell you if your show doesn't work. A waitress can tell you if your show doesn't work. A doctor, a lawyer, a dentist can tell you if your show doesn't work. They might not know why it doesn't work, and they might not have any clue whatsoever in terms of how to fix it. But man, they know it doesn't work. It's like milk in a refrigerator. You open the door, you sniff the carton, and you can smell if it's off. You don't need to be a biochemist to know that. Because the story doesn't feel real. So also from Sir Isaac Newton, truth is ever to be found in the simplicity and not the multiplicity and confusion of things. You know, mathematicians talk about an elegant formula, and programmers talk about, you know, an elegant software solution. That's always a synonym for simple. So, clarity is incredibly important in storytelling and in characters. Life is confusing and chaotic. Stories are not. We do not look to stories to see a reflection of the chaos and confusion that surrounds us every day. What stories do is they help us see cause and effect. In life, cause and effect may take a decade, and we may not be able to perceive it until at some point in our life we turn around and we look back. Oh, this led us to this and this led us to that. In a story, that's speeded up. So clarity is incredibly important to character development and storytelling. So what we want to know is what is most true about a character. Not what could possibly be true, but what is most true. Psychology looks at life like this. We take one person, and in psychology, we look at all the possible contradictions and complications in their life. When we create a character, we do the opposite. We take all the things that could possibly be true about that character and we narrow it down to what is most true about the character. There are two focuses on a screen at any one time. If you're old enough, you remember the test pattern on a television or, you know. That is used to check the quality of the projection. Test patterns in the early days of broadcasting was used to check the quality and clarity of the broadcast. Nobody in this room would expect anybody to watch a show or a film on any platform if The focus came in and out of clarity. If the sound didn't sync with the picture, amateur time. Nobody wants to sit through that. But all the time, content creators expect audiences to sit through programming where the motivation doesn't sync with the character, where there isn't a consistent quality in how that character is created. It is as aggravating for an audience member to sit through a program where the emotional focus is out of kilter as it is for them to sit through something where the physical focus is out of kilter. So, what's the emotional toolbox? I began the creation of this system when I taught in the master's program in screenwriting at the UCLA Film School. And one of my problems in the writing workshop was, how do you critique someone's script in a way that they don't say, oh, that's just your opinion? And in my professional career, the most difficult statement that anybody can make, be it an actor, be it a director, be it a producer, be it a writer, is when they come up to you and they say, my character wouldn't do that. There is no way to argue with that, because that is based on a subjective assumption that's unspoken about the character. You have one assumption, I have another. And at some point, someone says, my character wouldn't do that. What this emotional toolbox process does is to try and take out what is most subjective about the conversation, the development conversation of character and story, and make it more objective. And this is an exercise in pattern recognition. Most people look at the wrong pattern. And I'm going to give you an example. And this is where I think data analytics has to be very, very careful. I said I was a story heretic. One of my heresies is that genre is useless, at least to creators. It's useful to marketers, because if you're in the mood for a happy-go-lucky viewing experience, you're not going to want to watch something, a show about somebody with a knife. But here's an example. Apocalypse Now and Chinatown would never be on the same shelf in a video store on the genre list on Netflix. But emotionally, from an emotional structure point of view, they're the same movie. In Apocalypse Now, the protagonist looks to solve one simple mystery. Where is Colonel Kurtz? In Chinatown, the simple question is, who killed Hollis Mulray? Over the course of the story, the protagonist learns the truth about something much bigger and more complex. In Apocalypse Now, it's the morass of Vietnam. In Chinatown, it's the corruption in the water system in Los Angeles. And in the end, the protagonist finds out the truth about himself. Martin Sheen, in Apocalypse Now, realizes that he could just as well be Kurtz. The heart of darkness is inside himself. And in fact, the people surrounding Kurtz want him to take over the job. In Chinatown, Jake Gittes, Jack Nicholson, discovers that his inability to ask for help and to try and do it himself results in another woman he loves being murdered in Chinatown. And he has plenty of places he can go for help. He can go to the press, he can go to his partner, his ex-partner, who's a cop, but he doesn't, because he doesn't trust anyone. Now, if he went and exposed Noah Cross and the incest between him and his daughter, Jack Nicholson's love interest in that movie probably never would have spoken to him again. But she wouldn't be dead. So you can run all the analytics you want on war movies, but it's not going to tell you what Apocalypse Now is. It doesn't get you to the heart of the story. So it's really important to be looking at the right pattern. If the pattern you're looking at is war movie, then the heart of the story, that is Apocalypse Now, will elude you. So part of this process is creative consensus. Everybody in the content creation chain has got to be telling the same story with the same characters. Also, one of the things, and I'm here to learn just as much as present. I'm very excited to be here. But one of the things that concerns me about analytics is that you're looking into the past, into what worked before. And I've got, I think Game of Thrones is really a good example on a number of fronts. 8 years ago, if you would have said, I want to tell a story with a couple of dozen of main characters, and we're going to shift away from what we think is our core cast to go off for several episodes to some other place, and the people that we are supposed to bond with in the beginning, the guy we think is our protagonist, dies. They would have said, you can't do that. Nobody will watch that. It's too complicated. But the genius of Game of Thrones was the excellence and the consistency of who those people were. And the reason for the mass outrage, I mean, we're talking outrage on a global scale, about the ending of that series, is that people didn't buy Daenerys Targaryen's motivation. I had a professor at UCLA, I'd be dinner with him last night, who famously has said, whenever anybody asks you about a character's motivation, it means the character doesn't work. Because when a character is acting consistently, Even though that's a surprise, nobody questions motivation. It's not a topic, it doesn't come up. So I think it's really important in analyzing what's going to work in the future that we don't just rely on what has worked in the past. And it's important to ask the right questions. There's a wonderful mystery called The Skull Mantra. And it's by James Patterson, but not that one. Not the big, internationally multi-published one. It's a different James Patterson. It's a Chinese detective who runs afoul of the politics in Beijing and gets sent to build roads in Tibet. And there's a murder of a high-ranking Chinese official, and he's the only detective in 1,000 miles. So one of the things that he says is business relationships, personal relationships, investigations, and I would add stories, fail because people didn't ask the right questions. So asking the right questions is key to getting the most useful information. And getting to the heart of the story requires often a different set of questions than traditionally we've asked. I did a fairly long consulting gig with a major television network in their marketing department. And the reason that they brought me in is they had a show which was Sexy Doctor in a Chaotic Work Environment. Now, that could be sort of the summary line for about 15 different medical dramas. So how do we distinguish this one? And looking at it from a crane shot, rather than just medical drama, sexy guy, one of the things that I saw as a recurring theme in the episodes that they had shot and the scripts that they had written was this show asked, how do you heal someone when you yourself are broken? Now, that's a distinguishing point of view. Here's another story heresy. I don't believe in archetypes. I think archetypes are useless because an archetype is a job. Wizard, warrior, jester. Those are jobs. They tell you what someone is, but they don't tell you who they are. And all the audience is interested in is who that person is. So let's just take the classic archetype wizard. On my website, which is below there, ETB Screenwriting, Emotional Toolbox, etbscreenwriting.com, I have an article about the wizards in Harry Potter. And they come at that job from 9 different angles. And it depends on how they view magic, what they think magic is most useful for, what they think the dangers of magic are, how they think magic should be taught, where they see their role in the world of magic. Point of view. Point of view. Wizards are not interchangeable. They have to be specific, and they have to be clear, and they have to see the world in a specific place, a specific way. It's interesting that you cannot act differently than how you see yourself or see the world. You cannot act differently than how you see yourself and how you see the world. That's why backstory is useless in character development. Let's take two examples. Someone loses their parents at an early age. Someone who has a particular point of view, seeing the world as a dangerous place, filled with potential pitfalls and difficulties, will say, "You see, the world is a dangerous place. I lost my parents at an early age." Someone else who has a more optimistic view of things will say, "You know, I lost my parents at an early age, and it was a profound tragedy. But what was amazing was the teacher who spent extra time with me, who helped me discover and encouraged my talent in music or writing or math. It's the neighbor who never forgot my birthday." The world is a wonderful place. The world is a wonderful place. That's why we have the typical Irish cliche of twin boys born into the same alcoholic, dysfunctional family where it rains all the time, and one becomes a priest, and the other becomes a criminal. We've seen that a million times. It's in speaking to that first comment about transformation, my last heresy is characters do not change. They transform. Characters are who they are, and over the course of the story, they become a better version of who they are or a worse version of who they are. I personally have never met someone who had a personality transplant. And there's a process that I use to look at a story and a character from that crane shot. Because when you get down deeply into a story and you start saying, "This is wrong, that's wrong, okay, that doesn't work, this doesn't work," the natural reaction is to explain and justify and defend and get defensive. This character map creates 6 data points that everyone in the room agrees on before we move on to the next data point. And my job is to get the creative team to tell me why the character of the story doesn't work. And when you lift everybody off the page, that's much easier to do. Again, creating consensus. This last, rather complicated looking diagram is moving on from the character map. We look at the 9 character types, all of whom see the world very differently and are driven by different values. And I'm just going to close by saying, what is power? Power is the ability to produce change or the ability to prevent change. That's all power is. So the question, what is most true about the character in the story, has everything to do with the emotional power that drives them and the point of view that they have and how obstacles and problems reveal their character. Because difficulties do not build character. Difficulties reveal character. And I want to say that storytellers, whether your position in promoting storytelling is in finance or data or content creation or being legal counsel for the company, you are part of the storytelling process. And storytellers are the most powerful people on earth. Because storytellers can move the human heart. And there is no greater power on earth. Go forth. Be powerful.
Thank you, Laurie.